It was like I was fully conscious. I just couldn't EMT respond. 98. Then suddenly I took off. It was like being on a roller coaster. I zoomed and boy was it fun. When we stopped, I was in a place that was as real as the city I am in now. I knew where I was, I was in heaven. I walked through a meadow of waving green grass until I came to an angel. He was about 7 feet tall. We walked together and were joined by other people I knew who had died. My great uncle was there, and so was my big brother, both of whom had died in the last 10 years or so. We were together as naturally as if we were right here on Earth. The angel and I went up a hill. He opened a beautiful gate and I went inside, where I stood inside a very bright yellow light. There were no labels in this place. They didn't EMT ask me what church I belonged to, they just invited me to come right inside. I looked into a room that was absolutely brilliant with light, and I saw what I considered to be the light of the Father. It was so bright that I had to look away. As I looked away, I could see that the light reflected down a crystal boulevard that ran down the center of a city. I saw many other things, too, but one of the most interesting was that prayers were streaming through this heavenly world like rays of light. It was beautiful to see what becomes of our prayers. 99. This woman rallied and began to get well almost immediately. She came out of the coma and began talking about what she had seen. Her doctor was called back to the hospital from home. To his great embarrassment, he had signed a death certificate, and now he had to unsign it, as she put it. When he arrived, she became very excited and began telling him what she had seen. Surprisingly, he was unimpressed. At the end of our conversation, she began to cry. "Ao, you know," she told me, "Ao talked to my doctor about this and he said, honey, that a TMS something you need to talk to your minister about. Atm, I talked to my minister and he said, honey, you need to talk to your doctor about it. Atm, when she said that, we both started laughing. There were so many other stories. A man in Chicago told me this one. I had what I think was an out-of-body experience when I was having bypass surgery. The doctors later told me that they had so much trouble starting my heart that they were ready to declare me dead. What happened to me was a very living experience. I was transported to a big room that glowed like gold. I looked around the room and saw thousands of faces, like pictures all around me. My attention was drawn to one of these pictures. I went up and looked at it. It was the kindest face I have ever seen, and because I have always been a religious person, I like to think that maybe it was King 100 David or perhaps King Solomon, but I really don't yet EMT know who it was. Anyway, as I looked at this picture, I heard a great choir of thousands of voices. It was the most beautiful music I have ever heard. I turned and saw a chorus of thousands of people really singing it up. That experience was confirmation of a heavenly afterlife for this man, though others interpreted it differently. A few days later I told my aunt what had happened and she turned white like a sheet. Other man told me. Ao, she said, keep it to yourself. Stuff like that can only happen to people who are in touch with the devil. My man in Atlanta had been in a motorcycle accident that left him with a lacerated liver. Blood poured from his liver into his body cavity, and he began blacking out. It was some time before the attending physician stopped checking his head for a concussion and discovered that he was bleeding internally. By the time he got to surgery, he had lost enough blood to be dead. While the doctors began cutting, this man found himself drifting upward into a heavenly light. He could turn over and see his body being worked on by doctors below. He remembers thinking that he should have been afraid, but he wasn't EMT. A voice kept telling me to take it easy, that everything would be okay, he said. Then I just sort of rolled over and settled back down into my body. I talked to my 101 doctor about it and he never even looked up from the clipboard that he was writing on. He just grinned like he knew everything and said, it was probably just a dream. Mass scientists now agree that near-death experiences are not dreams. Dreams happen to people who are asleep and are associated with specific brain waves. But this doctor's TMS proclamation was disturbing to the man, who knew very well the difference between dreams and reality. What he experienced was real, and it wasn't EMT until now, surrounded by others like himself, that he had the reality of this experience confirmed for him. Nurses came forward, too. I have found that although doctors tend to ignore these experiences, nurses listen to them and use them to help patients heal. For example, a nurse in California told me about a patient dying of cancer who had a pre-death vision. She saw her aunt, who had been dead for more than 10 years, standing at the end of her bed. The woman was glowing with a heavenly light and looked pain-free and happy. "AOETMLL be with each other soon," she said. A few seconds later, she disappeared. When the oncologist made his rounds in the morning, the woman told him what she had seen. She was excited at the vision and its meaning. To her it clearly meant that there was life after death. As the nurse put it, this vision was the only good news the woman had had in 6 months. The doctor listened to her with a deadpan expression. When she finished, he simply dismissed the story with a 102 wave of his hand. "Sounds like a dream to me," he said. The enthusiasm left this woman at EMS face. When the doctor went out, she sank into the bed, her head almost disappearing into the pillow. The nurse immediately came to her rescue. She propped another pillow under her head and said what a heartless fool she thought the doctor was. He doesn't EMT notice things like that because he at EMS interested in machines, not patients, she said. Things like this happen to a lot of patients in your position, and I think they are something other than dreams. The two went on to have a lengthy talk about visions and death. Until that vision she had not been able to face the fact that she was dying, I said the nurse. But now she talked about it openly, and her own doctor missed that opportunity. During these tours I met people who had spent years tormented by the fact that they had had a powerful spiritual experience that no one would discuss with them. I heard horror stories from people who were made fun of by family members because they had seen the same heavenly places that I had seen. These were healing experiences for me as well as the people I met because finally we were together, and finally we understood. I found many of the stories these people told so fascinating that I began writing them down, amassing case studies of my own. Here are several that I collected. 103, AF gates were made of gigantic pales. In Chicago a woman approached me, walking with the sort of stiffness that indicated a back injury. She introduced herself and then wasted no time in telling me why she had come to the talk. In a very short period of time, my sister was killed in a car wreck, my best friend died, and I broke my back. I was rear-ended at a very high rate of speed by another automobile. It was a wonder that I wasn't EMT paralyzed by the accident, and even more of a wonder that I didn't EMT die during surgery. I was in surgery for 4 hours to fuse 2 vertebrae. The doctors readily admitted that they gave me too much anesthetic and that my heart stopped a number of times in the operating room and even in recovery. At some point in all of this, I went through a dark place and found myself in the presence of the Lord. I was right there. You might find it hard to believe, but I stood before gates that led right into heaven. The gates were made of gigantic pearls, 12 big ones that seemed to glow. The streets inside these gates were a golden color, and the walls of the buildings were so bright that I could barely see. I saw a person of light that I think was Jesus. I couldn't EMT see his face, but he was glowing gloriously, 104, and furiously. Even when I couldn't EMT look at him, I could feel the glow, it was that strong. I went to a garden that was filled with green grass and was lush with flowers and fruit trees. If someone picked an apple, for instance, the apple would grow right back. I wandered through this garden, seeing other spirit beings like myself. Then I saw my sister. It was wonderful. We talked for a long time, and she told me how happy she was here in this place, which I guess was heaven. We spent a long time together, talking and listening to the heavenly music that came from everything. It was so beautiful and peaceful, and naturally I wanted to stay. After a while I had to go back and talk to the person I thought was Jesus. He told me that he loved me and wanted me to come back. I said that I wanted to stay right now, but he said that I had to go back to Earth because he had something for me to do. I wanted to know what it was that I had to do, but he would not tell me directly. Instead he said, "Ayo, you will know what it is every step of the way." It was a relief for this woman to find others who had gone to this heavenly place. Her husband was tired of hearing about her experience, and her minister was making a sincere effort to distance himself from her. Whenever she came around, he got Ayo Ariel busier with other things and had little or no time to devote to her. 105, Ayo, since I told him what happened, he wants nothing to do with me, she said. Ayo no longer take it personally, though. I realize that most people just don't understand. Ayo have asked answers to my questions of an elderly woman I met in the Midwest felt misunderstood, too. She approached me and with great liveliness told about her a journey to heaven. She was so sharp and clever that I was shocked to find she was a victim of multiple strokes and had a bad heart. Here is her story. I was in a hospital in Michigan where I had been taken because I was having strokes that were causing seizures. My heart wasn't strong enough to get me through these seizures, and it stopped. I felt the pain of cardiac arrest for a minute, and then a peaceful feeling came over me as I saw a light off to my right. I was drawn to that light like a magnet to metal. As I got closer and closer, I felt love and understanding swelling inside me until I thought I was going to explode. I came into this lighted area and there was a spirit made of incredible light that I think was Jesus. I was hugged right into that light. It was a wonderful feeling, like being hugged by my dad, who, 106, loved me regardless of what I did. It was that kind of love. And this light was more than light. It was made of millions and millions of tiny, diamond-like sparkles that glittered and had feeling. I knew I was a part of this light. I went into a grassy area that was like a lovely pasture. I found my grandmother there, a woman who has been dead since I was a small child. I also found my uncle, who had been dead since my teenage years. In a blink of an eye I left the grassy place and was back with Jesus. He said, "Ayo, what have you done for your fellow man?" He asked it like a question, but there was also a sort of answer there, too, which was that I was going back to Earth to actually do things for my fellow man. People I have told this story to insist that I was having a dream, but this was totally different. I have had dreams and I have had drug reactions, and this was neither. It was real. Ayo wanted to be a part of the loving lighter in the deep south. I met a lovely young woman who said she could understand completely what had happened to me, since the same thing had happened to her. During her pregnancy a few years earlier, she nearly died, 107, when a pain she was ignoring proved to be something serious. When I was about 6 months pregnant with my son, I started having pain underneath my right breast. I thought it was just heartburn, which pregnant women frequently have. But it got worse and worse, and it took longer and longer to ride out the pain. Finally, I woke up one night and the pain was so bad I could hardly keep from crying. I went into the bathroom and tried sitting in different positions, but nothing helped. The last thing I remember was sitting on the edge of the bathtub. Then I passed out and fell backwards. I felt like I was out of my body. I felt like I was going 1,000 miles an hour, just surging up a tunnel. I passed several lights and headed for a very bright one that got brighter and brighter. Then I stopped. I didn't want to go into the light, but just standing there in front of it gave me a peaceful and joyful feeling that was not easy to explain. The best I can do is to say that I wanted to stay and be a part of the light, and I didn't feel like I cared about anything else. I didn't hear words, but a voice that came from somewhere said that I had to go back. I began to argue, but the voice reminded me in a very gentle, 108, way that there was someone inside of me and I owed it to him to go back. I still wanted to stay. But then another thing happened. The light made me feel the way my husband would feel if I died. I felt very sad then and wanted to return. When I awoke, I was in the recovery room of our local hospital. My gallbladder had ruptured and I had nearly died. Luckily, I did not EMT, and my child was born in good health. Few people understood near-death experiences back then, which usually left those of us who TMD had them feeling like social outcasts. That was not EMT the case with this woman. Her husband accepted her story as real, with the result that their relationship became stronger than it had ever been before. It's a TMS, not a time to go near death. Experiences are baffling for adults, so you can imagine the confusion that takes place in the mind of a child who lives to tell her parents about a journey into the light. A woman in Virginia told me of one such experience. When I was 8 years old, my appendix ruptured. I was taken to the hospital, where a frightened emergency room doctor told my parents that I was going to die. I heard him say this, because he said it while standing over me. 109. They did surgery anyway. I was given ether and I blacked out. Then I was back. I was drifting above my body as the doctors cut away on my abdomen. We at me losing her. One of them kept saying. I was excited by this, because whatever was happening, I liked it. All of a sudden I was going through a dark tunnel and heading for a light at the other end. Then I found myself in a beautiful place with a big bright light that was beautiful and did not TMT hurt my eyes at all. I looked around me and could see people that I did not TMT recognize. There was a silence, and then I heard a lady a TMS voice in my head. Oh no, no, it is not her time to go. She has to go back. Don't you TMT want to go back? I thought. You have to, other voice said. You have a good life ahead of you. When I told my father about this later, his face turned pale and he got real nervous. Don't you TMT tell anyone, he said. This is our secret. So I did not TMT tell anyone, even though the experience has been with me every day since it happened. I thought maybe there was something wrong with me until I started hearing about the experiences that other people have had. Now I can finally talk openly about mine. 110. What you are doing is wrong. Many people told of how they had been transformed by their near-death experiences. But one of the most amazing of these stories came from a woman near Washington, D.C., who tried to kill herself. Here is her story. When I was a teenager, I decided to kill myself because my uncle was molesting me. I took a handful of pills and then went outside. I was very upset and fell to my knees and began to cry. I felt groggy and then fell over on my side. It was then that I heard a voice. It was evening, and I looked around to see who was talking. There, standing over me, was my grandmother. She had killed herself years ago because of chronic heart disease. She looked down at me and got right to the point. What you are doing is wrong, she said. You are in a TMT supposed to kill yourself. The spot where my grandmother was standing was very dark, maybe because a spot next to her was becoming very bright, like a train coming through a tunnel. This light picked me up and held me close. It's our TMS, not your time, it said. Have things for you to do. I staggered into the house and called the police, who saved me. I told only close friends about the experience, because who else could understand? I did not TMT think there was anyone else like me. 111. This woman, a TMS experience changed her life in many ways. Somehow, she said, it gave her a sense of the big picture. She realized that although she could not TMT change what had already happened in her life, the future was a clean slate. Her grades improved and she began to volunteer in nursing homes. Now she is a registered nurse. AO chose a helping profession specifically because of my near-death experience, she told me. AO will walk you back. Many people who almost die report seeing departed relatives. This did not TMT happen to me, largely, I think, because I had not TMT lost anyone who was close to me. But a woman I met in Florida told me about her near-death experience, in which she saw a number of dead relatives, including a stillborn son. I almost died during childbirth. In all the straining that goes on, I burst a blood vessel and my blood pressure plummeted. I was in great pain and then suddenly I was out of my body, floating above my body. I watched the doctors for a while and then began fluctuating higher and higher until I was above the ceiling and actually able to see the wiring. Then I went up a cave, and at the end I was with a number of people who looked just like me. I saw 112, my grandparents, who had been dead for years, and an uncle who had been killed in the Korean War. Then a young man walked up to me, a child really. He said, "Ayo, hi, mom." And I realized that this was the stillborn child I had had a few years earlier. I got to talk to him for quite some time and felt very happy that he was here in this place with his relatives. Then he took my hand and said, "Ayo, you have to go back now. I will walk with you." I did not TMT want to go back, but he insisted. He walked with me and said goodbye. Then I was back in my body. How could I tell this stuff to anyone? Who would believe it? My husband would not TMT even want to hear it, so I did not TMT tell him. But now I can talk, now that I know others have seen these things, too. Although I met hundreds of people who TMD had near-death experiences, I met very few who experienced all the things that I did. Most people went to what I call the first level, in which they go up the tunnel, see beings of light, and have a life review. Very few went to the City of Light and the Hall of Knowledge. One of those who did was a man who had grabbed hold of a 13,000 volt line without being grounded. The resulting surge of electricity blew both of his legs and one of his arms off. He came to one of Moody TMS lectures and talked to me afterwards. The afterlife that he had experienced was the same as mine. He talked about rivers of energy that he crossed with a being of light. Al. 113, though he had no visions of the future as I did, he had visited a city of light that had the same glowing cathedrals and sense of omnipresent knowledge as the one I experienced. I tried to talk with him in greater detail later, but he would not TMT say too much about what had happened. By nature he was a quieter, more private person than I and had been made sullen by the skeptics who had heard his story and insisted that it couldn't TMT have taken place. Still, I persisted in trying to talk to him about his near-death experience. But I got nowhere. I couldn't TMT break the ice with him as I usually could with others. He was also taking a substantial amount of pain medication, which made him even less communicative than he might have been. I encountered other people during this time who had been to the City of Lights. One was a Mormon man I met in Salt Lake City whose story was almost identical to mine. He saw the beings of light and the glorious cathedrals. Instead of referring to them as spirits or beings, however, he called them angels. And he called the cathedrals tabernacles. In Chicago I met a woman who had been struck by lightning as a child. She was well dressed and appeared very sane and calm as she described going to the City of Light and standing in the presence of what sounded like the same spiritual beings I had talked to. She said that the beings trained her in a system of colors. Everything she did now was based on her intuitions about colors. When she bought a car, when she 114, dressed in the morning, even when she decorated her office, she did so based on some color scheme that had been given her by the beings of light. I did not TMT understand exactly how this color system worked, but the result, she told me, was to bring her together with others like her who had been to the cathedrals of light. Aoyatma supposed to come together for something great, she said. Ayo, don't you TMT know what it is? But I will know when we get together. Suddenly I was meeting people who had not only had near-death experiences, but WOTMD had almost the same experience I had. Finding these people was a great relief. It was almost like coming to the surface after being held underwater by an unseen hand. These meetings confirmed the reality of what had happened. Perhaps one person like myself could have dreamed such a magnificent adventure. But could a number of people in different parts of the country have the same complex dreamer at the point of personal extinction? For me, the answer was clearly no. We had really died and gone to a spiritual world. The only difference between what we had done and visiting a distant country was that we did it without taking our mortal bodies with us. Meeting these people also convinced me that I was not insane. As you know by now, that was a concern of mine from the beginning, as it was for almost all the other near-death experiences I was now meeting. We began to realize that we were special, not insane. This sense of being special came over us when we realized we were not alone. Instead of feeling ashamed or humiliated, we suddenly felt good about ourselves. I should mention that Mormons did not make near-death experiences feel crazy. Since the afterlife was a part of their church doctrine, they actually welcomed testimony on what had been seen and heard on the other side. In 1977 I went to Spain, where I sat on a panel of people who had been clinically dead but survived. These people came from all over the world, from Europe, the United States, and Asia. As we told stories that were similar, I realized this was a universal experience. Along with confidence in my sanity, I gained an even stronger feeling that I had been given a true mission, to build the centers. This mission was, in essence, my message. I never wanted to do any of this stuff, but only a fool would resist a mandate from God. I never ran into anyone else who had been given such a mission, nor did I ever meet anyone else who saw visions of the future or who sat before the 13 beings of light and was presented the future a box at a time. When I got together with others, I was the only one to talk about such an event. Still, I knew that it had happened. Parts of the vision were beginning to take place, and I could see subtle things happening in the world that seemed to indicate that the rest of the visions would also become reality. My confidence grew and I felt psychologically stronger. 116. A.O. We are normal people, I remember saying in a panel discussion. A.O. We are normal people who have had something paranormal happen to us. Although I still looked a bit damaged from the lightning strike, I was indeed feeling more normal by the day. Then I made a discovery that truly jolted me. 11. Special powers. There was no first time here that I realized I had psychic powers. I did realize something extraordinary was happening when a friend barked at me one day, "Ayo Danyan, why don't you TMT you keep your mouth shut and let me finish my questions before you answer them?" Ah, the answer popped right out of my mouth. "Ayo, because I know what you are going to ask before you say it. Ayo, no, you don't yet TMT." Ah, the friend barked again. "Ayo, okay, try this," I said, and I told him his next sentence. His jaw dropped, because it was exactly what he was about to say. Then, as he began to speak, I talked along with him as though we had practiced it, saying the same thing he was saying at the same time he said it. I began to experience this phenomenon with members of my family. It got to the point where I answered their questions before they were even asked. I didn't EMT know how I was doing this. I just heard what they were going to say before they said it. This was as much a shock to me as it was to the baffled person to whom I was talking. 118. I remember doing this once at a seminar where I had been invited to speak about my experience. As people came up to talk to me, I would begin the conversation by asking the question that they were going to ask me before the words even left their mouths. This surprised some of them, who then turned to others around them and said, "Ayo, he read my mind. My father was there, too, and he couldn't TMT believe what was happening. He had seen me do this before, but never in a setting made up entirely of strangers. As soon as I finished talking to someone, he would corner him and ask if I had truly read his mind." 9 out of 10 people insisted that I had. By the time we left the seminar, my father was dazed and confused by what he had seen. "Ayo, how the hell do you do that?" he asked. "Ayo, don't you TMT know?" I shrugged. "Ayo, just don't you TMT know. And I didn't TMT. I didn't TMT know that these questions had not TMT been asked. I would hear the words in my head as surely as if the person had spoken them. When I realized what was happening, I tried to tune into the other person. I found that if he hesitated when speaking, it was usually a sign that he was changing his train of thought. At that moment I could pick up his thought waves and hear what he was thinking. My ability to read minds improved rapidly, so rapidly, in fact, that it almost ruined negotiations on a business deal.